Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 502 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast, and if you are watching, you can see that this is a totally different setup, location. I'm trying a couple of new concepts. I've done a pool cast before where I'm outside the pool on the deck talking and going over some wrestling stuff, but this week, because it is the week of 4th of July, Independence Day here in the United States, of course, I am in the pool doing a beer review, but not just one beer review. I'm going to do four beer reviews because some friends of mine, Scott and Melissa, picked up a four-pack of different Schlafly American-themed beers. And so Schlafly, a brewery based out of St. Louis, Missouri, has four great American-tied beers here. So I'm going to tie them, you know, during the year, throughout the year, every month, I try to find a theme. You know, October, all the podcasts in October were about Halloween. In December, everything kind of was centered around Christmas and tying wrestling into that. And sometimes it becomes a challenge. I don't do it every month, obviously, and I don't do it necessarily every week of a particular month because it can become a challenge. And so for July 4th, though, I always try to, the week of July 4th when the podcast drops, I always try to do something American-themed, patriotic-themed. Last year, for example, Chad and I discussed patriotism in wrestling, not just American patriotism. We centered it around that with Lex Luger and Sergeant Slaughter, but we also incorporated the Iron Sheik, who had just recently passed away, and did that kind of tie-in of all patriots in the world of professional wrestling. Now, I've talked about Sergeant Slaughter. I have talked about Hulk Hogan. I have talked about the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. I have talked about Hacksaw Jim Duggan on this podcast before, on YouTube before. I've done Wrestling Under the Influences with them, and we've talked about them. To me, that is your Mount Rushmore of American wrestling patriots. Hulk Hogan, Sergeant Slaughter, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. No particular order. Now, through the years, we saw, you know, Sergeant Slaughter probably most notably turn his back on his country. All four of those guys eventually became heel during their popularity runs. But, you know, Sergeant Slaughter in 1990 becomes an Iraqi sympathizer. And pardon, the dog is swimming around in the background. You may hear a lawnmower get kicked up. The air conditioning just kicked on. So you're going to hear some outside noises as this podcast goes on. And I apologize for that. But, you know, we saw Sergeant Slaughter, of course, with his run, eventually re-embracing his country and coming back and becoming an American hero. In sometime during the Monday Night War era, we see Hacksaw Jim Duggan join Team Canada, which I never understood why Canada was always painted as an enemy of the United States with the Rougeaus, with Dino Bravo, Frenchie Martin, Team Canada. You know, I never quite understood that. I know Chad will have a sarcastic comment for that, and I look forward to hearing that from him. But then Hulk Hogan, obviously NWO, but Hogan was that American patriot that just kind of embraced it, was a real American, you know, was his theme song for a long time. And it never was necessarily his entire gimmick, obviously, but it was a big part of his popularity. And then the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, just kind of embodied that everyday man, that everyman American, and of course had it in his name. He turned and joined the NWO for a minute as well back in the late 90s. So I'm not going to you know, even though I just probably spent 2 minutes talking about all four of those individuals, that's not the focus of the podcast. The podcast this week is going to be trying these beers. And because it is hot outside, I have them in a cooler and I'm going to just do them one at a time on my flight here. And we're going to start off with the American Pale Ale. And again, this is from Schlafly Brewing out of St. Louis. The American Pale Ale is 5.9% alcohol by volume. And we're going to do the pour. I have this nice flight set too that my friends Scott and Melissa, again, they're my beer providers, got me this. But the focus of this week's podcast is going to be on those lesser known Patriots. I don't want to say they were fails, but I'm going to say they are lesser than the originals, the predecessors, the better known Patriots, if you will. But first, let's try this. This, again, is the American Pale Ale, 5.9% alcohol by volume, and it looks like 30 IBU. I don't have my real glasses on, so I can't see, or my cheater glasses on. It's got a nice aroma to it. You can see it's got a great pour. It's not bad. It's not bad. Not my favorite. You know, I'm not a big ale fan. I drink them. I tolerate them. I will have them from time to time. On a scale from 1 to 10, I'd probably give this a 6. I don't love it, but I don't hate it either. So as we talk about, I think I'm going to do the beers first to keep them cold and keep the conversation going with the beer side of things. Next on our list is the Schlafly American Lager. And this one is just 5% alcohol by volume. So we'll pour this one out. Much lighter pour. This is probably going to be more of my jam, especially before I started drinking craft beer. I was drinking more in this world. This is just 25 IBUs, International Bitterness Unit. Yeah, this one is much better than the pale ale. It definitely is smoother to me. The pale ale had a little bit of a, I don't want to say a bitterness to it because the IBU is pretty low, but there's just a something there that didn't click with me. But this one, much better. This is one of those beers you get in trouble with because it goes down quite easy. You're drinking these along the pool and you lose track of the day. So on the American Lager, we're going to give that one an 8 out of 10. The American Lager gets an 8 out of 10. Let's reach in here. This is the American IPA. Now, for those who don't know, IPAs are typically more bitter. Although I've had a lot lately that have not, or maybe my taste buds have adjusted and I don't notice the bitterness as much. But I've had some that have been pretty bitter through the years. The Stone Cold Steve Austin varieties of the Broken Skull IPAs, those have been not too bad in terms of bitterness. And I've reviewed all of those here on the podcast. And I am still looking for the Hulk Hogan Real American beer, and I will be doing a review on that as well down the road. Now, an IPA is also going to be more hazy, more citrus. This is a hop forward icon that changed the IPA game for Schlafly beer, and it's returning to lead Team USA. Our IPA gets its bold hop flavor from 100% American grown hops, and its deep gold and full body from pale and crystal malted barley, a blend of Amarillo and Simcoe hop varieties. So it's got lots of hops. It's got citrus and fruit aromas to it. That checks out. This is your standard IPA. Again, it's going to be a bit more hazy than what you would typically see, obviously from our second example of the American Pale Ale, or I'm sorry, the American Lager. Let me put these in order over here so I can still see them off to the side here. But that American Pale Ale, I'm sorry, the American IPA is a 7.2% alcohol by volume. Your IPAs are going to typically usually have that higher alcohol level as well. And I wish I knew the science behind it, but I don't. Solid IPA. a little, yeah, the bitterness kind of lingers. And that's with an IPA, take that first sip, and sometimes, you know, back in the day, I would take a drink of it and be like, eh, this isn't for me. But I usually now will have another and just give it some time to resonate. And that second sip is a hell of a lot better than the first. They say first impressions are important, but with an IPA, I always say give it another opportunity. That one, I'm going to give that one a 7 on our scale from 1 to 10. So right now, the American Lager is our front runner as far as being my favorite. Last but not least, and I did purposely order these to save the best for, or what I think and hope is going to be the best for last. This is the American Cream Ale. And I will tell you, the American cream, that's the road, if you will, is going to drink this cream ale. I like cream ales. And I didn't read the summary on all these cans, but I am going to read this one too. Despite the name, cream ales do not contain dairy products. The oldest American style predates prohibition and showcases. Oh, I'm sorry, predates. I don't have my glasses. I'm apologizing here. It predates prohibition and showcases the American brewers who first incorporated European techniques with American-grown ingredients. An easy drinking ale brewed with barley and corn. The combination creates a bright and refreshing beer with a straw color. So let's see here. Yeah, I see the straw color. I like cream ales. My favorite is a sour beer or a fruited beer. Didn't have any in this variety pack, but you can see there a nice pour. It's pretty clear. Can smell the corn, believe it or not, and it's got a creaminess to it, or a creamy smell to it. I haven't tasted it yet. That's good. It's refreshing. It holds up for a cream ale. It's exactly, and it's not overly creamy. This one is a 5.5% alcohol by volume and a 20 on the IBU. Give this one a solid 8.5 on that 10-point scale. So as I suspected, it would be my favorite, and it is. But yeah, Schlafly rarely disappoints. They always have some great beers in their lineup. This American 4-pack was obviously something that I wanted to try and do. My friends, I've gotten to the point now where a lot of my friends are finding different beers on road trips and places they go and bringing them back. And I try to do reviews on all of them. And I know sometimes that probably isn't, you know, people don't want to see all that. But since I had 4 of these and then all the other ones that I've gotten over the last couple of months, I'm like, I'm going to do a quick 4-pack video review. So, you know, again, the American Pale Ale was okay. The American Lager was good. The IPA was good. And the Cream Ale, I would say, is great. So it's all good stuff here as the dog rubs up against the fence here. But, you know, if you're here for this podcast, you're probably not here to listen to me talk just about beer, although some of you may be beer enthusiasts as well. And if you are, reach out. Let's collaborate and talk and do some things. Speaking of collaborating, I did last week's podcast on the wrestling figure toy drive and have gotten some people that have bought raffle tickets for the prize pack. Again, all month of July, we'll be taking donations. $5 gets you an entry into the drawing for the My 1-2-3 Cents prize pack that Chad sent. Lots of great gifts and things from Pro Wrestling Crate, some autographs and DVDs and all kinds of cool stuff. So again, check that out. You can hit me up on social media and make a donation to that cause. Let's talk about why we're here. And that is to talk about wrestling. And I had mentioned, you know, I have 4 beers, so I'm going to pick 4 different quote-unquote patriots throughout the years in wrestling. And most of these, I feel like the whole, you know, right now you have the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, but I don't feel like, even though he dresses in the patriotic, you know, the red, white, and blue, and he's got the tattoo and whatnot, and he's, of course, the son of the American Dream, but that they don't focus that, you know, that he's not waving the flag. He's not like a Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He's not like Hulk Hogan was back in the day, or Sergeant Slaughter, where these were a big part of their gimmick. And I don't feel like we see that as much in 2024. And we haven't seen it in a while. And I think part of that, and someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, Bruce Pritchard kind of mentioned this on a recent podcast talking about the Great American Bash, why they didn't necessarily embrace that name, because WWE has become so global and so world-renowned that pigeonholing an event to just America was sometimes insulting, or perceived to be insulting, to other countries, the fans in other parts of the world. And I know this year especially, we've seen more international PLEs, and I think, though, that they've all kept a pretty neutral-sounding name outside of Clash at the Castle, but that wasn't necessarily derived to a specific part of the country or part of the world. So I can understand why, in one sense, maybe the Great American Bash was not always going to be the choice pay-per-view or PLE for WWE. It makes sense, you know. I do wish they would do more with Halloween Havoc, but that's a whole other story for another time, I suppose. So I think that's part of the reason. And I'm trying to think, I don't watch AEW on a regular basis, so I don't think that they have anyone on the roster that is, you know, that flag-waving, America-loving superstar, superhero type of wrestler either. And the same would go with TNA. And so I just wonder, you know, in the 80s, it was a great trope to go to, because you could have the American hero against one of the real world, real life enemies of our country, you know, Iran and the Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkov and Russia, later Sergeant Slaughter and sympathizing with Iraq. So it was easy and maybe in some cases lazy storytelling to just kind of create that American hero and then find that enemy. And it wasn't just the 80s. It goes back into when Fritz Von Erich was, you know, with the Von Erich name, was supposed to be a dastardly Nazi, you know, fighting in the United States. And Baron Von Raschke, before he turned babyface finally, he was that evil East German from Berlin that was, you know, paralyzing people, the Russians, Nikita Koloff and Ivan Koloff, and then eventually Nikita turns and becomes an American sympathizer, if you will. So we've seen it through the years. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I personally liked the Nikita turn initially, but as we look back on history, you know, a lot of people have said it was great for that emotional moment with Magnum TA's accident, but perhaps it went on a little too long, and it shouldn't have lasted as long as it did, because Nikita Koloff was one of those legit, or seemingly legit, badasses that I was surprised never went to the WWF back in the day to challenge Hulk Hogan, because that would have been a great heel foreign opponent for Hulkamania to, you know, unfortunately, I guess, depending on your perspective, kind of run over and run through at the time. So I'm going to try to drink some of these before they get too warm. But yeah, so here are my four Patriots. Again, I'm not going to say that failed, because it's not always the fault of the athlete or the wrestler. Sometimes it is, but I think it's a combination. And sometimes we are quick to blame the company. Sometimes we are quick to blame the performer. Sometimes I think it's a combination, and sometimes it's just timing. And I think with this first one, it is a case of timing, and that is this man, Corporal Kirshner. This is the only figure I have that's going to be a part of this list. So Corporal Kirshner, the LJN figure from back in 1986. Corporal Kirshner, though, unlike Sergeant Slaughter, the man who he was seemingly replacing, because Sergeant Slaughter had left the WWF over a contract issue, in 1985, I think it was right around, I don't know the exact date, but he wasn't a part of the first WrestleMania, and I feel like he was already gone by then, because I would think that they would have had Sergeant Slaughter as a part of that show. Sergeant Slaughter was huge in 83 and 84 in the WWF, and then Hulkamania was born, and Hulkamania ran wild, and I think, kind of replaced Sarge as the number one baby face in the company. And so in 85, actually a little bit before 85, we saw a wrestler named R.T. Reynolds, who was enhancement talent, but R.T. Reynolds later went on to become Corporal Kirshner. And I got a shout out, and I know it's the OVP, it's Our Vantage Point. They used to do a podcast, and now they just do wrestling. They watch in order each week. They started with Wrestling Challenge, not Challenge. They started with the show before it became Superstars, and now it's escaping me. Championship Wrestling. They started with that in 1982, and now they're two superstars in 86. And so they kind of, you know, hearing their perspective and their thoughts on Corporal Kirshner kind of reminded me that he was R.T. Reynolds before he became Corporal Kirshner. But he was legit. He served in the 82nd Airborne and was a part of WWE, WWF from 1984 until about 1987. Allegedly, I don't know if it's true or not, and he's obviously not here any longer to defend himself, but supposedly maybe have failed a drug test, but was you know, I remember Corporal Kirshner and seeing him, and the vignettes were cool, but then the execution of the character felt to me less than Sergeant Slaughter. And I feel like kind of with, and this may be a topic for another show, but C.B. Offee coming in to replace Jimmy Snuka, it was, again, it was kind of that less than version. And you know, years later, we got the Renegade coming in supposedly to be kind of like the Ultimate Warrior. So that was in WCW, of course. But yeah, despite the push and despite, you know, getting some victories over the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff, he beat Volkoff in that flag match at WrestleMania 2. Beyond that, there wasn't much for him. And he eventually then started sliding back down the card, even though I don't think he got terribly high on the card. But you know, eventually he's back to kind of that enhancement talent role, and to no fault of his own. And I know he eventually went on to become Leatherface in Japan and enjoyed some success in Japan under that gimmick and wrestling there. There were talks of him being in the Gimmick Battle Royal at WrestleMania 17 in 2001, but that didn't happen either. And unfortunately, as I mentioned, we lost Corporal Kirshner in 2021, although the WWE years earlier had reported on his demise, but they came back and retracted that story. I don't remember what the confusion was there, but I liked Corporal Kirshner, but again, I guess I'm kind of surprised, but not, that they made an action figure of him, because this is an era where they were trying to get all as many of those guys that we were seeing on TV into the. And it's a cool action figure with the costuming and the you know, kind of capturing the true look of Corporal Kirshner. So he's even got his little dog tags painted on. So Corporal Kirshner, okay, I suppose, but not anyone that was going to rewrite history, if you will, in the world of professional wrestling. The Patriots are 2 and 3 on my list, and not the Patriot, Del Wilkes. Although that could be a case for another podcast, his run in the WWF specifically. But the Patriots were brought in as special forces for WCW in 1991. And this, again, is that time of the Gulf War, the first Gulf War against Iraq. It all kind of started in the summer of 1990 and then spilled into, and we kind of went into Iraq and Kuwait. In January of 1991, I was a senior in high school. I remember being a very kind of almost a tense time. I was concerned at that point about being drafted and serving. I am not, you know, I'm a pretty much a chicken shit, basically. And I have all the respect in the world for those who have gone and served our country, and especially those who have gone and fought in a war zone and been a part of that. I have family members who have done that. I have friends who have done that. And I have nothing but admiration and respect. It is something that I could not and did not, frankly, want to do. So it was, I'm saying all that to say that it was a tense time in our country. And there was fear, at least on my end, of something happening with the draft. But wrestling, you know, was capitalizing on that. And again, the Patriots were Todd Champion and Firebreaker Chip. Todd Champion was kind of billed as a, I think they had him, I read this earlier, now I didn't write it down. I thought that he was kind of a Marine, was the gimmick. And then Firebreaker Chip was just a fireman. They had a great look, but they were mid-card at best. I know they won the WCW US Tag Team Championships from the Freebirds. That's kind of their secondary tag team title. If you weren't watching back then, they eventually lost them to the Young Pistols. And then they kind of floundered from there and eventually left the company. And I think even ultimately ended up leaving the industry. So again, no ill will, nothing against them, but they were just not, to me, they were just kind of there as a tag team. And again, it was part of that capitalizing on the situation going on around the world. But again, they were there just about a year in WCW. Last but not least is Lacey Evans. And this is a kind of a recent controversy because Lacey Evans had a couple of different gimmick incarnations through her time in WWE. Lover or hater, and I know that there's, for some reason, she's a bit of a polarizing figure in wrestling. I thought she had a great look. I liked her kind of almost like a wartime pinup girl in the early parts of her career. I don't remember exactly what she was doing in NXT, but I think it was something similar to that. They brought her in for the Women's Royal Rumble one year, and then she eventually came to the main card or the main roster. She went out at one point because she got pregnant. Was doing this stuff with Ric Flair, and they were alleging that it was Ric Flair's baby and all that. And then when she came back, she was more of a military type persona, which we had not seen. At least I don't recall seeing this in the women's ranks. And, you know, as women's wrestling grows and continues to develop and evolve, we're going to see more of these kinds of things. We're incorporating and maybe tagging some of the women in gimmicks that were typically used on the men's side of things. And Lacey Evans is an example of that. She is legit, though. She was a sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. So if, you know, the person that was pissed about the Lacey Evans military gimmick was Sergeant Slaughter, who, with all respect to the character and to Bob Remus, the man who played or plays Sergeant Slaughter, he never served our country. So I always found it puzzling that he was mad about that. And maybe it's just, again, I don't know all the ins and outs and all the details, but maybe it is a little bit of that bitterness coming through. You know, the old timer with sour grapes. I don't know. And I don't want to accuse Sergeant Slaughter of anything because, again, I have the utmost respect for him and what he does or has done for the world of professional wrestling. I just read, though, that he was on Busted Open Radio and said that, you know, I guess that WWE had reached out to him to manage Lacey Evans, and he was insulted by the contract offer. Said he should have been paid $1 billion for all that he's done. And I don't know if that was tongue-in-cheek. I'm just reading the text, the quote of it. I don't know what the context of it was or how he said it. Maybe he was kidding. I don't know. But for someone to be that full of themselves and think that highly of themselves, $1 billion is a lot of money. I think it could have worked, Sergeant Slaughter and Lacey Evans together. And almost even as a heel side of it, where Sergeant Slaughter, when he first came in, was a heel. And I'm not talking about the Iraqi sympathizer stuff. I'm talking about the whole, when he first came in and was managed by the Grand Wizard in WWF. So I think a relationship, a partnership with Sergeant Slaughter and Lacey Evans could have worked, especially given her history and her pedigree. You know, she's obviously tough and is able to get in there and do what needs to be done. But again, that lack of, I think maybe Sergeant Slaughter's outcry at the time detracted from her success in being able to move forward with it. WWE maybe decided to cut bait and she eventually then left the company. So another one of those that I think could have been, but of the four, you know, Corporal Kirshner, the Patriots as the tag team, or as individuals, and then Lacey Evans. I think Lacey Evans had the most potential to be something, develop into something bigger than just the patriotic gimmick, if you will. So I want to hear from you, though. I want to know what some of your favorite patriotic gimmicks in the past have been. American patriotism is what we're focusing on for the sake of July 4th. I know there are plenty out there that I did not mention, but those were the four that kind of came to my mind when I first developed and came up with this idea, because originally, pardon the dog, was going to go for those four core guys that I talked about: Hacksaw, Dusty, Hulk, and of course, Sergeant Slaughter. But I went this path instead. So let me know what you think. Give me your thoughts. Leave a review of this podcast. Thanks to Ken Johnson, who did just that very recently. So Ken, I'll be getting you a prize here very soon as well. Friends, thank you so much for listening and or watching. Have a great, happy, and more importantly, safe 4th of July. Be careful out there. We will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.